What is up, everybody, and welcome to Tailgate Talks. Welcome to the tailgate. Today is June 26th. It's a Wednesday evening, and we are recording episode 225 for you. It's summer, so the news around here is a little bit slow as of this week. You know, NBA is over, NHL is over, the College World Series is done, so pretty much all the sports are behind us. It's baseball and Summer Olympics heading up right now. So this is a slow time. So we've got a few Texas Tech headline things to discuss. And then me and Dustin's favorite show is House of the Dragon. We're big Game of Thrones people. So, you know, we thought since the news is slow, we don't have a whole lot of stuff to talk about, that we will do a little bit of dragon talk. So we're going to dive into House of the Dragon episodes 1 and 2. For you this week. So fun episode coming up for you. Hope you guys enjoy the little House of the Dragon talks that we do here at the end. And to catch everything we're doing here at Tailgate Talks, you got to follow us. Follow us on Apple and on Spotify. Give us those five stars for the tailgate. And if you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. Let us know your thoughts on our Dragon talks if you want. We always appreciate those. Also, follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. So we do most of our posting and interacting. So follow us there. We also have Facebook, Instagram, and a YouTube channel. And lastly, if you have any comments, questions, anything you would like for us to discuss on the tailgate, you can always send us an email at tailgatetalkspod@gmail.com. So with all of that said, let's go ahead and get into this week's episode.
Get your guns up, Red Raider Nation. Let's go.
Well, Dustin, as I said coming into the show, there's not a whole lot going on in the Texas Tech world right now. The transfer portal crazy time is kind of past us now. The Texas Tech basketball roster set. Texas Tech football is getting some recruits. We might dive into those maybe later on next week or somewhere down the road where we need some filler. But we got a few Texas Tech items to discuss. We'll start off with the Ring of Honor. It was announced last week that 3 football members will be added to the Ring of Honor, starting with Andre Tillman, Thomas Howard, and Wes Welker, Red Raider legend Wes Welker. Dustin, not going to really ask your thoughts on Andre Tillman and Thomas Howard because we didn't get to watch them play. Don't really know too much about them. Know that they're obviously really good Texas Tech Red Raiders and happy to have their names on the stadium. But really kind of want to focus on Wes Welker and your memories of Wes and what you think about him getting into the Ring of Honor means.
Yeah, like you said, obviously, like, Tillman and Howard were way before our time, but good for them.
Way before, yeah.
I'm kind of down for opening up Ring of Honors and Hall of Fame type stuff to just let more people in to get recognized, you know? Don't make it super...
Let legends in.
Man. Yeah, don't make it so exclusive that you only have like 5 people, you know? So it's cool that we're adding 3 of them, which is kind of a lot at one time, which is great, I think. Yeah, Wes is probably like the second most notable Tech wide receiver ever after Crabtree. And I mean, we were known for wide receivers for quite a few years there during the Leach era and just after him, especially. So, I mean, and then he had such a great NFL career and kind of changed the slot receiver position for a generation to come, you know?
For white guys everywhere.
For white guys, short white guy, fast white guys everywhere, yeah. And so it's really cool. And, I mean, he's also probably known for one of the best pictures in Tech history with the A&M punt return picture at A&M, which is apparently the number one hardest place to play. And it's obviously great. It's hung up in about every bar in Lubbock. But glad to see Wes get in and get his accolades. So...
Yeah, for me, you know, Wes was like one of my kind of my first like real big favorite Texas Tech player when he came onto the scene. Just really fun to watch. Like you mentioned, changed the game for in slot receivers, especially in the pros. You know, here at Tech, we've always been trying to find Your next Wes Welker, Danny Amendola filled that role. Eric Morris kind of did it for a little bit. You've had others, you know, Jakeem Grant and stuff like that. But, you know, Wes really was iconic for that role. And then not to mention, you know, the punt return being like his most famous picture. Like his return game was kind of what really defined him for me. You know, at one point he had the lead for most punt return for touchdowns in a career. I don't know if that record still stands anymore. I think it might have been either tied or broken, but he was such an electric punt returner. He was such a clutch player for you. That punt return against A&M was, you know, in the clutch moments of the game, he was just a lethal weapon on the field. It was fun to watch him with the ball. It's been fun kind of watching his highlights again. People have been posting since he was announced. And then it was, you know, it was really touching just to see him on the video call, learning that and how emotional he was about it. And so really just, you know, excited for him and his family and for them to get, for him to get this honor. It's going to be cool to have him in the house when the Ringer of Honor, when their names go up on the stadium. So always been a Wes Welker fan. We'll continue to be a Wes Welker fan and excited for him and excited for the Tillman family and the Howard family to get, you know, and for their names to be put up there too. Always cool to get to introduce new Red Raiders to the Ring of Honor. The ceremonies are cool and everything that they do for the players. So exciting news that came across the feed last week. So excited about that. Some other kind of news, not Texas Tech specific, but Big 12 specific. This came across, I can't remember if it was last week or maybe the week before, but it's been since the last time we were hopped on the mics. The Big 12 is exploring selling their naming rights to a title sponsor. So that means a company can buy the rights to name the conference. You can, the first one that I saw was Allstate was in negotiations. I haven't seen anything since it then, but it would have been called the Allstate Big 12, which I don't like that name, but what are your thoughts on the Big 12 trying to sell their naming rights and get a potential title sponsor, which would be, you know, completely new in college sports?
Yeah, really, I don't know, interesting out of the box idea, I guess you could say. Your mark's really good at that. We've seen over like last 2 years of just because it's always been done, this doesn't mean anything to him. And I mean, if you're going to be the third conference after the Big Ten and SEC, kind of need to make up that money a little bit. You're not going to make it all the way, but this is, a really good way and idea to kind of bridge that gap and get your conference some more money. That's really all this whole thing is. So if you got another good source of income like that, go for it.
Yeah, I think he's doing a great job in the era where everybody thinks that it's, you know, eventually headed to two conferences, and it still might be, but he's given the Big 12 some staying power with some of these out-of-the-box ideas. I think it's really interesting. You know, we might not end up really liking the name, you know, whatever, if it is the Allstate Big 12, that's, I'm still just going to call it the Big 12. Yeah. I'm not going to call it the Allstate Big 12. But it would be fun if there's a interesting, entertaining, you know, sponsor who comes in, buys the rights, gives it a good name, something that kind of, goes along with the Big 12 conference. You know, and so we'll be interested to keep an eye on that and see what ends up becoming of that and what that does for the conference in general will be interesting to see, and interesting to see if other conferences, some of these smaller conferences out there, if they try to do something similar. So we'll keep our eyes on that. We might have a new conference name by the start of football season. Might as well, as we have a completely new looking conference going into this next year with 16 teams. And so I think it'd be a good way to kick it off with a new name. Next up on the list, well, this time next week, if we are recording an episode next week, which we will try to plan to because we'll have some stuff to talk about, it'll be Texas Tech will officially be an Adidas school at that time. Texas Tech is waiting till July 1st to officially become a Adidas school, which is Monday of next week. And so this being the last week of Under Armour, we thought we'd give a little farewell to Under Armour. But first, let's start off with just how excited are you about the transition into Adidas for Texas Tech this next week?
This would be really cool. We've been Under Armour for a long time. We were the first ever all Under Armour school for Under Armour, but they've kind of fizzled out, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
And like
big time.
Adidas is just better gear overall, especially like for basketball and some of these Olympic sports. So I'm pumped for it. And then it obviously gives a clean slate for what will uniforms look like. Are we going to change it up a little bit, up a lot? I mean, we've seen like TCU and a couple other schools come out with some Baylor with some quote unquote
Baylor new, had some new ones.
Jerseys, but that Baylor, all they did was bad. Add a stripe to their shoulders, and TCU, I don't know, they got the smallest font ever on their jerseys, so pretty lame stuff. And then Iowa State, of course, went with another jersey that doesn't have their colors in it, so really hate that for them. So, another. I hope with this new slate and some creativity, Adidas can show us and do some real cool and good uniforms for us.
Yeah, that's the exciting part for me, is just all the reveals, the videos, the social media content that we're going to get out of it the next week. Yeah, Patrick Mahomes' involvement, like what extent is his involvement? Is his logo on everything? You know, that's something I'm kind of curious to see. But yeah, you know, it's exciting. I always love new jersey combinations. I always love those reveals and kind of getting to see that. And you're getting a completely, like you said, blank slate. It's you're starting kind of from scratch. And so we'll be interested to see what they do. From what I've heard, there's like four football jerseys from the start. There's like three combinations. You're probably your red, black, and white.
Gray?
And then there's like gray? A special jersey. I hope not. I really hope not. I bet, though. Fans are going to love that.
Maybe we go like
jerseys, right?
Yellow or green or the camo look again.
And maybe blue. Like,
do the Iowa State and do the color that's not even yours.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I would love that. But yeah, just it's fun, you know, the especially with how our social media team is, you know, there's going to be some really cool videos, some really cool introductions to, you know, and it's exciting for all the sports. You know, you get it, new jerseys all across the board everywhere. So interested to see what baseball, basketball, you know, soccer, volleyball, like what all those jerseys and uniforms kind of look like. And, you know, hopefully they come out with some really cool stuff and, you know, get the fans out to the stores to buy up those new jerseys. I'm excited for new gear to buy. You know, I hope Adidas has some fire shirts and stuff like that. So for us to go and purchase, I really want to get that Mahomes Adidas shirt where it's the tech. And I hope that's something that
I looked through my closet today and literally have zero Adidas anything, shoes, shirts, short, nothing Adidas at all.
That's what makes me a little nervous about this stuff is like I'm a big Nike guy. I like a lot of the stuff I own is Nike. Like you said, I don't really have a whole lot of Adidas gear. I think the one thing that makes me nervous is like they're not really known for like their polos and stuff like that. I always thought, you know, as we transition here into like our farewell of Under Armour, I always thought Under Armour had nice fan gear. Like the Under Armour polos were always really nice and really like worth your money. They last a long time, good, comfortable material. And I just don't know if Adidas has that level of stuff. I guess we'll see here in the future. Any other thoughts on Adidas?
No, just really excited for
before
it.
Before we move over.
Also can't wait for all the Under Armour stuff to go on super sale.
Those clearance sales will be really nice. Looking forward to that. Hopefully Red Raider Outfitter and all those stores do big clearances sales so we can go raid their closets and steal, get a good steal on some of that gear. Meanwhile, we do say goodbye to Under Armour as, you know, this is the last week. And so I wanted to do just like a quick discussion on some of like your favorite jerseys, favorite, any favorite memories, any favorite gear, any Under Armour stuff you kind of want to get off your chest here. First off, let's start off with like the football jerseys. We're not doing throwbacks, obviously, because those were just copycatted from others. So those don't count. Meanwhile, they did throw out some good fire, some throwback jerseys. What are your favorite football jerseys, Dustin?
Looking at, you know, the main, I guess, four that we've had over the last 15 years or whatever. I really like the Seth Dagey Tuberville look, with like the small, I don't know, collarbone looking thing on it. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And a little bigger on the back, but yeah, I thought those looked really clean, during that era, you know. I think something that failed was when Cliff was coach and had like all this creativity of uniforms. He came out with a lot of bad ones during that time. So I just wanted to point that out as well. There were quite a few bad ones during Cliff's time.
Yeah, those were some interesting jersey combinations. I'll never forget the Texas one with the Texas flag.
Yeah,
on the
we
helmet.
Used blue.
I didn't like those.
One of our colors.
We used blue. Didn't like that. Didn't like. Was never a huge fan of the gray jerseys. Was never a huge fan of some of those kind of crazy. But like at that time, doing crazy jersey combinations was kind of like the fad in college football. So you're trying to keep up with the times. My favorite jerseys are the Crabtree era jerseys, 2006 to 2010. Those were the first Under Armour jerseys. And I thought they're really nice, clean, good, black, red, white. All the versions of them were good. Just the
those had the bigger like collarbone stripe, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then like the stripe on the pants.
Yeah.
So they're pretty simple. They're pretty simple, but I just thought they were a nice, clean jersey. And I think of those and I think of winning because that was like your most successful time in Texas Tech football in my lifetime. And so you had a lot of wins. You had, of course, the Crabtree era, which was and Graham Harrell era, which was fun in those. And so I look back and have a lot of good memories with those jerseys. And so I think that's why I look on them a little bit more fondly. Kind of same for basketball for me. I have the 2016, the 2019 jerseys. That's the jerseys that you wore when you made the Elite Eight Final Four run. I think about those jerseys when I think about Tech basketball because that's also when you had your most successful basketball run. So those are my favorite jerseys. Any insight on your favorite basketball jerseys from the Under Armour era?
I feel like basketball hasn't
and by the
changed
way, if y'all
as want, much.
By the way, if y'all want to yeah, basketball's been simplistic. If y'all want to see all the jerseys, Guns of, or the Nation has posted these on their Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, so you can kind of go check out the eras. But
yeah, because like I'm looking at them and like the, you know,
the first jerseys were kind of the most
by far, and those are terrible and ugly to be honest.
Yeah, that was bad.
It's kind of goes back to football. I like those 2010 to 12 ones. With the small little stripe on the collarbone type deal. Texas Tech is big and legible. I think they got a little smaller as we went along. Not a fan of what we did this year with the Texas on top, the number in the middle, and then Tech underneath it. So I'd rather keep Texas Tech all in one piece, not have Texas as half our jersey look. So
right.
I like those 2012 type jerseys for both, I guess.
Yeah. I will say that there was a jersey this year, the white jersey that we brought out for the Kansas game. That was pretty fire. That wasn't a throwback because I thought it was a throwback at first, but then watching Auburn had like the same kind of jersey. So I think it was just like a new jersey that they came out with that kind of made it look like a throwback, but was a new one. I thought that was a good little like last jersey to ride off into the sunset on for Under Armour. But I mean, I thought they did good baseball jerseys. I thought our black red jerseys, our pinstripe jerseys were nice. They had nice throwback jerseys every now and then for baseball. I thought some of that stuff was good. Any other kind of farewell words you got for Under Armour memories or anything?
No. And kind of last thing was you kind of noticed last year, we didn't get a lot of new or cool stuff as much, not even throwbacks as much. I think that's just because Under Armour's like, we're done with y'all. We're not going to put in the effort and like use our stuff to make you look cool and better when you're leaving us. So I'm excited to, you know, start anew and see what cool stuff and new stuff we can get with Adidas.
Yeah, you know, I'll say, it was kind of cool to be an Under Armour school at the start. I remember, you know, the Under Armour commercial where, you know, the fans were storming the field after the Texas game. Like, that stuff was kind of cool because Under Armour was coming up at the time. But, you know, I did like Under Armour gear and stuff like that. So I will miss some of those fire polos and stuff that they come out with. But ultimately, it's about to be past us and on to hopefully bigger and better things with Adidas and becoming an Adidas school and the Patrick Mahomes brand and all of that. So a lot of exciting things ahead. And, you know, hopefully we have some cool reveals next week that we're able to hop back on the mics and kind of talk about the jerseys and everything that we've seen from the Adidas content. So we're hoping for that. Last little bit of Texas Tech news that we have for you this week before we get into do we want to do final shots before we go into Dragon Talks, or do we want to do Dragon Talks and then go into final shots?
You can do final shots before.
Yeah, let's keep it on the sports end, and then we'll go into doing our House of the Dragon Talks. But Texas Tech softball, of course, we lost our coach, but they have since filled the position. Jerry Glasgow from the University of Louisiana comes in as the new head coach with a .773 winning percentage. So he did pretty good. And from what I've heard, I'm not somebody that's very connected in the softball world. Neither of us are really, but he was quite the winner at Louisiana and was building that program, and they made the tournament every single year with him as a coach. They made it to the Supers this year, and they had a squad that everybody was saying was looking like a team that could make a College World Series run next year. So you're bringing in a guy who's been pretty much a proven winner ever since he took over the reins as a head coach. And so any thoughts on this hire, Dustin?
Looks like a really good hire. Like, yeah, he had like a smaller type school as a host team for the tournament, like every year, and had a really good winning percentage. Is, you know, from the South area, going from Louisiana. So, like,
yeah,
you're not drastically changing recruiting really. And yeah, it seems like he could come in and keep this really good recruiting class and team that was on the way up together. So really excited for softball. That's a good hire, I think.
Yeah, good hire. And with the transfer portal, maybe you can bring some of those players over from Louisiana if they wanted to continue to play for this guy. So, you know, I think it's a good hire from everybody in the know. A lot of people were saying home run hire. And so I do think it's funny how, like, everybody goes from bashing Kirby after this to, like, wow, home run hire by Kirby.
Yeah, I feel like it's like that every time.
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. It's like, wow, what a failure. Wow, what a home run. So things change drastically in the college world. So let's transition over to our final shots for the sports week this week before we head into Dragon Talks. Dustin, what is your final shot?
The College World Series in
baseball
finished up the other night with a great game with Tennessee winning, beating A&M. Thank you for that, Tennessee.
Yeah,
we love keeping A&M down and seeing Aggie tears across our timelines and TVs.
Yeah.
A lot of them. And then the hits keep coming for A&M as their coach jumps ship and moves over to Austin and takes the Texas job. They fired their coach literally like less than a week ago, and then the A&M coach's name popped up. He was formerly the TCU head coach. That's where most of us remember him from. And there's some, I don't know, famous words getting thrown around that in his post-game press conference, you know, after they just lost national championship by one run, that someone asked him about this Texas job, and he, you know, said, uprooted my family to come to A&M, and I'm never leaving type stuff. I don't know exactly what he said.
I think he said, I took this job so I would never have to take another job.
And then, of course, less than 24 hours later, he takes a Texas job and is in an orange tie and suit. So never believe a coach in the hours after, you know, losing a big game and what's their next move type deal is the first thing I thought of. Because how many times have we seen this type of thing before?
Over and over.
Saban's not leaving.
He's done it before. He did the same thing with TCU.
I was going to bring that up too. He said, I'm not leaving TCU. And then less than a week later takes the A&M job. So, I mean, we've seen coaches literally in every sport do this. I mean, Saban did it. I'm not going to the Dolphins, and then literally goes to the Dolphins. I'm not going to Bama. Literally goes to Bama the next week. And like, I get you need to ask the question, but as a reporter, but don't believe whatever he says is also my point. So
famous words, don't ever take anything anybody says right after a loss or victory as
don't believe truth. Players at the parade and they're like, I'm gonna re-sign and be a Boston Celtic forever. When Derek White gets that massive contract, he's gonna jump ship and go to Charlotte. But yeah, so A&M's been taking hits all week for that, and then transfer portal obviously opens up, and literally five of their starters from Tuesday night are already in the portal. So, give me a little rough transition for them, you know?
Yeah, rough days for Aggies. I'm not sorry. I'm not sorry about it, but that's pretty tough. That's pretty tough to lose in like less than 24 hours, lose your coach to your most hated rival. Hey, been there before, A&M. We've been there before. It's funny to see all the tweets that people are retweeting of A&M fans thinking they're better, and you know, they're not poor Texas Tech who gets their coaches stolen. So, funny for them. My final shot will go to the NBA. I'm glad that you touched on that because I wanted us to discuss that for a little bit. But in the NBA, the Celtics closed out, won the championship over the Mavs. We don't have to go back into that, but pretty dominating series from the Celtics, and they cruised to a NBA title in that game five, the gentleman sweep, winning the title in Boston. So first title for Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown won the MVP of the finals. So, you know, good for Boston. You know, it's been a couple years since they won a title, so those fans were struggling there.
Five long years for Boston sports fans.
Five whole years. Long 5 years for those guys. Other NBA news, J.J. Redick is now the Los Angeles Lakers coach. I love how everybody on Twitter was like, so I'm a podcaster. I can just become an NBA coach, acting like he didn't have years and years of playing basketball, reducing J.J. Redick to just a podcaster.
Yeah, going from arguably, you know, Mount Rushmore, Duke basketball players, college basketball players in general, transformed his game to be a really good 15-year career for a lot of good teams. Only missed the playoffs 1 year. I think it's a good hire. I get that he doesn't have coaching experience per se, but like, he's really smart on what he's. If you ever listen to him do a broadcast and, you know, be on First Take type stuff, he's really, really smart and knows what he's doing and talking about. He just needs to hire around him to get some help, you know.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I'm really excited for this team. I hope LeBron stays because I really do think J.J. Redick's a great basketball mind. Like you said, listen to him on any commentary, listen to his podcast with LeBron, his First Take stuff. I think he's a really good basketball mind, and I think he's up for this challenge. I think he's going to be a really good hire. It might not work out with the Lakers just because of everything going on there, but I definitely think he'll be a good NBA coach in the right situation. Maybe this ends up being the right situation for him, and he can kind of solidify that Lakers head coaching position, which has been shaky for the last several years, pretty much since Phil Jackson left. So we'll be interesting to watch this team. He said he's not going to do podcasting anymore. So he is now just focused on being a head coach, which I don't think he'll have time to podcast that world.
But I also like this because it's just not recycling the same head coaches that tends to happen a lot in every sport, you know, college, NFL, NBA, you tend to recycle and hire Doc Rivers. And it's like, come on, or one of the Van Gundys,
Frank Vogel again, or another.
Come on. I'm glad just to get a new name in there in the coaching circle, and younger guy too.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to watch. I'm real excited to see kind of how he does. I've really liked JJ. I hated him at Duke, but really kind of liked what he became.
He was my
NBA.
Favorite Duke
really
player.
Enjoyed listening to his podcast. I'm sure. It'll be a fun watch. And then last little bit staying in the NBA as well tonight is the NBA draft, the first round of the NBA draft, as they have now shifted to two nights for the draft. So NBA draft begins tonight. Probably one of the most probably going to be a pretty crazy night, because there's just nobody knows who's going to go first round. There's just a there's no studs in this one
right now.
There's no stud.
It's the top of the draft.
Like
is
a lot of guys who can be role players. Yeah, so it'll be an interesting one. Kind of reminds me a lot of the Anthony Bennett draft, where it's like nobody knows who's going number one tonight.
Yeah, this one compares a lot to like
might just be able
Anthony
to
Bennett
help.
Draft. The 2000 draft was pretty bad too. If you go back and look through that, I saw a comparison of that at one point. But yeah,
But you look at all those drafts; they have like somebody like Giannis was in that, you know, Anthony Bennett draft. So maybe there's a player in there that can kind of become that for somebody, but I'm intrigued to see, you know, where these players land. I think there's some good role guys in this, so you know, it's not the worst thing to find a guy who can play rotationally for you, make you know, give you some minutes in the playoffs and stuff like that. So we'll be interesting to see what happens. Atlanta Hawks with the first pick, we'll be curious to see if any trades. The New York Knicks have assembled the Villanova team with acquiring Mikal Bridges.
Houston's making some big Nova moves Knicks. To get some pieces and might trade with the Suns. So that sounds like.
Yeah, they might try to get Kevin Durant. They might push for Kevin Durant. I also heard they might try to push for Jimmy Butler. Huh. So they've tried to clear some cap space to try to make a change. Apparently the Suns might be willing to trade him. So,
where will Bronny go?
Summer NBA. Yeah, what about Bronny? Where does he go? The Lakers draft him. Does somebody else draft him just because they're like, haha, fuck you, LeBron? You know, that's kind of intriguing, but will be interesting to see what happens. And of course, you know, NBA summer is like my favorite part of the NBA season with the draft, trades, free agency, and all that stuff. So we'll be back to talk about that a little bit in final shots later. But that'll do it for our final shots. That'll do it for our sports segment this week, but we're going to transition now over to Dragon Talks, where we're going to discuss House of the Dragon episodes 1 and 2.
I have sinned. I do not wish to hear of it.
Well, Dustin, we're going to get a little crazy this summer. Your and mine favorite show, House of the Dragon, is back, and so as you guys know, with that comes lots of fun content each week. There's lots of stuff going on in King's Landing and Dragonstone. And so we thought it might be fun while the news is slow to hop on the mics, talk a little bit about our favorite show with each other. And hopefully if you're a House of the Dragon watcher and you want to, you know, listen to our takes, you hop on, you can skip past the sports stuff. I'll time stamp this in the notes so you can jump ahead and listen. And so what we're going to do here, it's, you know, it is a sports podcast, so we're going to talk about this in sports kind of terms, right? We got Team Green, we got Team Black on both sides. So we'll kind of go through what's happening on Team Green side, on Team Black side in each episode. We'll throw out a couple winners, couple losers, and then at the end, we'll give a character comp. So this week, we're giving our character comp for Kristen Cole. We'll have a Big 12 comparison. We'll have a Texas Tech character comparison. So lock in, strap in, jump on your dragon, and let's do it. Introducing your starting five for Team Black. On Team Black, in case you're unfamiliar with the show or you just, you know, you haven't been an avid watcher, names in Westeros are hard to keep up with. Team Black, you've got the queen, Woo! Queen Rhaenyra. The one who was chosen by her dad, King Viserys. You've got her right-hand man for a period of time in Daemon Targaryen, her
husband.
You've got her uncle husband, yes, remember, in Westeros, or at least with the Targaryens. It's a lot of family. A lot of family on family. You know, a lot of family fucking in this show. You've got Corlys Velaryon, the Lord of the Seas. You've got his wife, Rhaenys Velaryon. And coming in last, Jacaerys Velaryon, the oldest son of Queen Rhaenyra. On Team Green, you're starting five. You got King Aegon coming in. You've got the Hand of the King, Otto Hightower. The Queen Mother, Alicent Hightower. You've got the one-eyed Aemon Targaryen. And last but not least, the worst person in Westeros, Sir Criston Cole, coming in as the final starter for Team Black. So let's jump into season 2, episode 1, A Son for a Son. I'm going to give a quick recap starting on the Team Black side. Is that the music of the Starks I hear, Dustin? Yes, it was the music of the Starks. We get a brief look at Winterfell and we are back at the wall. It was nice to be back at Winterfell for a brief second.
It was nice. And it's really cool to see the wall, like very, you know, panoramic wall showing it's how massive it is, you know?
Yeah, a lot of memories there from our time with Game of Thrones. So that was nice to be back. We got our guy, Jacaerys Valyrian. We're going to call him Jace moving forward. He's searching for allies for Team Black. Finds himself at the wall talking to walks like a Stark, talks like a Stark. Must be a Stark. That's Kraegan Stark. Man, when I heard his voice going on, I was like, that's a Stark for sure. He had the look of it. He had ice on the back of his shoulders. Was good to see have a Stark back in the show. Kraegan Stark offers Jace some soldiers for the war to come, some Greybeards for the battle, but then news of Lucerys Valyrian's death arrives at the wall, Luke having died at the hands of Aemon Targaryen at the end of season 1. Jace then heads back to Dragonstone, where Daemon is ready to act, Rhaenys is preaching patience, and Rhaenyra is grieving the loss of her son's death, looking for a sign. She finds that in a wing and Luke's cloak that are brought to shore not far from Storm's End, where Aemon killed Luke. She finds her clarity. They have a funeral for Luke, and then she is ready to act. Rhaenyra utters one phrase in the entire episode. Those words, "I want Aemon Targaryen." On Team Green's side, Dustin, is that Alicent Warging? No, that's just Sir Criston Cole going down on Queen Alicent. That was an interesting turn, as it seems these two have taken their relationship to a hypocritical level now here in King's Landing. Also in King's Landing, they are prepped for retaliation after the death of Luke, as we see big crossbows and soldiers ready for an attack. They freak out when a dragon's flying, but no, that's just Vhagar, Aemon's dragon flying over King's Landing. Aegon the Magnanimous is learning how to be king under the tutelage of Otto Hightower and his mother, Alicent. They preach patience in the war, while Aegon and Aemon, they're ready to act. They've got the biggest weapon in all of the realm in Vhagar. They're ready to go take out Rhaenyra and win this war before it even begins. But back to Team Black. Lady Missarya, the worst accent from season 1. You might remember her. She's captured on her way out of King's Landing, brought to Daemon Targaryen, where he is ready to act on the words that Rhaenyra said, "I want Aemon Targaryen," and she can help him get into King's Landing with some names. Enter Blood and Cheese. Whew. This is a historic part in a Westerosi history. Blood and Cheese are asked to kill Aemon Targaryen. Not hard to find. He's got one eye and an eye patch, but what if they don't find him? ... We don't really know. So they walk through Maegor's tunnels into the Red Keep and find themselves in Queen Helaena's room with her two twin babies, Jaehaerys and Jaehaera. Blood and Cheese force her to tell him which is the boy. A son for a son, they say. Then they remove the child's head as Helaena runs off with her daughter in horror to her mother's room, where she is once again riding Criston Cole. Alicent asks what happened, and Helaena in shock says they killed the boy. End of episode 1. Whew. So, Dustin, we're back in Westeros, in King's Landing. What were your thoughts on episode 1 of season 2, A Son for a Son?
I don't know how Blood and Cheese can mess up. The only instructions they got was to kill the dude with the eye patch.
Well, that's the question, is but were then, they told A
yes,
Son for a
if
Son?
If you keep watching or rewatch, they say, what if we can't find him? And Daemon gives a little smirk and it cuts away. So does he say, just take whoever is nearby? Yeah. That's what it seems like we can, you know, determine happened. So crazy dramatic ending there. If you had the closed captioning on, it really literally said like sawing off a head or something like that.
I don't know, it was worse
than both of those combined was pretty horrific, honestly, because it was not like a quick one slice and done. They were a good 10 seconds of hacking this child's head off. So that was a crazy ending. And then, honestly, Helaena's super distraught and doesn't even register that her mom's hooking up with the Kingsguard that should have been guarding the door when this happened is my biggest point there. And yeah, too many sex scenes between Allison and Sir Criston Cole. We had a really long one to begin with, and then that second one there. Too much for me.
Yeah, especially for a guy who's not supposed to be having sex.
Like, we'll get into it in episode two, but he's like, talks about purity and this and that, and it's like, you're the dirtiest son of a bitch out there.
God, I hate Criston Cole. Yeah, it was good. A good first episode.
A lot of build up.
It felt felt very Game of Thrones first episode, like where you're kind of dipping your toes back in the water, seeing where all your characters are from season two to season one. Obviously, the timeline is not as drastic as season one. You're having these characters throughout the season, which is nice. And so they can kind of establish that storyline. And so you're days away from the end of season one.
I noticed that too and really like that.
And so,
continuation. Yeah,
like that continuation, like being back. It's always just good to be back in this world. Just with new characters kind of added, same old characters, the actors that you've gotten used to. And just kind of seeing where everybody's at. And then, of course, ending it in style with one of the more brutal scenes we've had in this world. I mean, Game of Thrones brought us quite a bit of awful scenes. This kind of ranks up there. I don't know how high it goes. There's lots of murder with child happened in the show. Lots of terrible things that have happened, but this definitely ranks up there for me. So let's go to the winner side of this, Dustin. Who are some winners that you got from episode one? And then after this, we'll crown whether Team Black or Team Green won the episode, which side won the episode.
I think your winner, or my winner kind of for this one, was Queen Rhaenyra in this. You saw a very vulnerable side of her. She's still grieving and mourning the loss of her son. You see the dragon wing there. And even something else, her dragon is also the mother of the dragon that got killed also. So the dragon is grieving for its own son as well.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned in the,
it lets out a nice
in
scream,
the summary, man. Like, she only had one line in this whole thing, and that was, I want Aemond, and they messed that up. But I thought it was really good acting without lines, and that's always, I think, a really tricky thing to do in TV and cinema now is, literally acting rather than just speaking stuff. And so I thought it was good and kind of gained some sympathy. I think most of us are Team Black anyways, but to start it off with gaining a lot of sympathy and mourning and grieving, I think was really good. Makes her my winner.
Okay. Mine is going to be not a lot.
Winners was hard to pick. So the losers, I got like three
really
for each.
Hard to pick. Losers. Yeah. I've got a lot of losers, but my winner, I'm going to go with Jace. I'm going to go with our boy Jace, who rallied some allies to the cause. He comes back, and of course, after learning the news, he's brought the Vale into the fold for Team Black. He's brought in some soldiers from Winterfell and has formed some alliances that are going to be very valuable for the war to come. So I thought, out of everybody, I thought about Rhaenyra, but she's just lost a son, so is it a win for her? A lot of things going on. So I got Jace. In addition, I got Winterfell. It was just nice. Winterfell and the wall. It was nice to be back in those locations and just kind of gave me those like goosebumps of just being
the
like,
walls
back in
are
familiar
winner.
Territory. So, the wall, Winterfell, that Winterfell music of the Starks that was playing at the start. Beautiful. I loved all that. Cool. So those are my winners. Like I said, hard to find winners. And I feel like it's going to be very hard to find winners throughout the rest of the season. Episode two, losers. Dustin, who do you have as your first loser of the episode?
You said two there, but episode one, we're not on two yet.
Not on two. Episode one, sorry.
Is the other mother in this, Helena, and obviously her son that lost his head. But obviously. Helena is like my loser here because obviously she's the one that is kind of surprise attacked, gets a couple of throat slits on her, and then points out and gets her son killed. So that's like super tragic in itself, and then has to watch and listen to it, and then is so out of it from the trauma, and like doesn't even recognize that her mom's hooking up with her Kingsguard that should have been guarding the door the whole time. So like super fumble there, Kristen Cole, way to go. You can even see like in episode two, like how distraught and out of it she is. So like, obviously she had to go through the most traumatic thing of this whole episode. So I got Helena as my big loser in this episode.
Yeah. My big loser is just all of Team Green. You let Team Black come right up into your house.
It seemed really easy.
slay a prince. You know, so that's pretty bad on all parts, you know, for everybody involved there. So not good defense, you know, just letting terrible goal line defense, just letting that happen.
The Olay defense in basketball. In your, let them by.
Yeah. Olay. Yeah. Just let them right through. Obviously the Kingsguard isn't up to its full capacity after, you know, some split to go defend Rhaenyra. So, but Kristen Skull, you got to fill that up. Like, that's your responsibility. So he's also a loser, but he's also part of Team Green. Any other losers you have in this episode? I've got a couple.
I did have Daemon written down just because he executed the kill order. You know, put on his criminal cloak and swooped down to King's Landing, hired a couple assassins, and then literally said, they want Aemond, but take a son, you know, whoever you can find, basically. And so mess that up. And then I did kind of like at the beginning of episode two when they're discussing it at the Team Black council table, and he just is smirking the whole time, like, they messed it up, but they got somebody.
Not even trying to hide. Nope. Not even trying to hide.
Damon's my other kind of loser getting the.
Yeah, I got
causing
a lot
of shit there
too.
Is what
everybody was kind of, you know, trying to prevent this war or at least like postpone it for as long as they can, and then, you know, he does this, and that's obviously going to speed us up into this war taking a full sprint here soon. I also got Cheese for kicking.
Oh yeah, dude.
Big loser. In everybody's response, that was almost worse than what
the Twitters were great on that. Like, oh yeah, we're seeing, you know, incest and queen hooking up and a child's head getting sawed off. That's all cool, but then once a dog gets kicked, we flip and riot.
We lose our minds. No reason. There was absolutely no reason to kick that dog. So shame on him for doing that. Shame on him for a couple acts in this episode. But more importantly,
so which one? The rat catcher is Cheese.
The rat catcher is Cheese. Blood was the city guard who hates the high towers. And so some Westerosi lore, the story of Blood and Cheese, which actually happens a little bit different in the books. In the books, Alicent is there as well, and they are tied up. And there is another son, Maegor, who is 2 years old, and Helena is forced to choose which son she wants. She chooses the two-year-old, and they end up killing Jaehaerys anyway. And then they tell the son that your mom wanted you dead. And so it's kind of a little bit more brutal in the book. Still a brutal crime no matter what. So Team Black or Team Green, who wins episode one? What side do you think pulls the advantage here? And a pretty brutal episode, I think, for both sides.
I don't know. Can we end this one in a tie?
I think it's got to be, despite the act, I think it is like Team Black. They infiltrated the castle.
I guess,
They
at,
took
at the end
prince.
Of the episode, you'd be right there that they're still up on top. I think we're grieving and mourning for their loss, and then they do infiltrate and take a son. So yeah, I think you're right. They probably edge out and win this one.
It's not like one of those wins you're proud about. It's like
it wasn't pretty, but
that,
we got
like,
it.
The officials gave you. It's like you knew the officials made a bad call and you got a win, and so you're just like, oh yeah, cool, great, we got that dub. That's all right. That's episode one, A Son for a Son. Let's move into season two, episode two, Rhaenyra the Cruel. We're starting off with Team Green this time in King's Landing. It's utter chaos in there in the aftermath of Prince Jaehaerys' death. King Aegon is enraged and decides to take his anger out on his father's Legoland set.
Oh, man.
The Legoland set of old Valyria. He puts the sword to that, destroys that set, and bring that rage into the Green Council, where he thinks, you know, he is being seen as weak. In the Green Council, Otto sets a plan in motion. It might seem like a cruel plan, but kind of is a brilliant plan. It's to propagandize this murder and make Rhaenyra look cruel. He says, let's have a funeral procession throughout the streets of King Landing, showing that Rhaenyra the Cruel has done in slaying Jaehaerys. By having his body shown and the queens riding behind him to mourn. Kristen Cole, meantime, blames his failure to protect the prince on himself on the inside, but on the outside, he's taking it out on the other Kingsguard, Sir Eric. Eric is the twin that serves the Greens. There's Sir Arik and Sir Eric. Arik serves the Greens. Eric serves the Blacks. He decides to send Sir Arik on a mission to try to end the war, head to Dragonstone, act as your twin brother, and slay Queen Rhaenyra and end the war and bring glory to the crown. Otto grows furious with King Aegon after the slaying of all the rat catchers, a.k.a. our guy Cheese, now dead, hanging from the walls of King's Landing. Also, Blood seemingly dead as well. He goes off on King Aegon. He also learns of the plan that Sir Kristen Cole came up with of sending Sir Arik, and laughs at that plan. Quite a scene for Sir Otto Hightower in this moment, going off on King Aegon and Kristen Cole. And then he's benched. Not a starting five player anymore. Sir Otto sent to the bench by Aegon, and he replaces him as the hand with Sir Kristen Cole, which surely that will go well. Back on Dragonstone for Team Black, news of Jaehaerys' slaying has now reached Queen Rhaenyra and Dragonstone, and she is being blamed for an act she did not cause. She quickly discovers Daemond is at fault for the act, as Dustin mentioned earlier, sitting at the table with quite a grin on his face, made it pretty obvious that he was at fault. They have it out in a pretty big battle of words in their quarters, in a brutal fight that causes Daemond to get up and leave, and not only leave there, he hops on his dragon and takes off from Dragonstone. Both sides losing a starter in this battle in this episode. Otto on the Greens, Daemon on the Blacks. Do we know where he is headed? We got a glimpse of it in the trailer for the next week episode, but we'll get to that later. Back on Team Green, Sir Eric has reached Dragonstone, but he doesn't go unnoticed as Lady Missaria, leaving the island after gaining her freedom, discovers his arrival, notices, hey, I just saw the other twin up in the castle. This is a different twin. He fulfills the first part of his mission by acting as his twin, infiltrating Dragonstone and getting himself into Rhaenyra's quarters. Just as he is about to attack, his brother enters the room. Brother, he screams, and thus begins the Cargill Bowl, the Battle of the Twins. It was tough to watch two twins who clearly love each other, not knowing which one was which, as the scene was very well choreographed, had no idea who had the upper hand at any time until after the one twin died. It's Sir Eric on Team Black who comes out victorious, but the horror of killing his own brother causes him to fall on his sword. And in his life, thus losing both twins in this episode. Back at King's Landing, Alicent casts aside her sobbing son, who's, you know, dealing with the pain of losing his son, to again go back to the arms of Kristen Cole in what is going to be called a hate fight this time. But the third time that these two have hooked up in a matter of two episodes. So, Dustin, your thoughts on episode two?
I really liked this episode. It was one of the longer episodes. Yeah, I think it was just over an hour long, or 70 minutes.
I saw it was 69 nice. Minutes.
And nice. Not a ton of action until we get that Eric fight at the end, but a lot of really good one-on-one discussions and talks that you brought up. I think you hit all of them, really. The one with Queen Rhaenyra and Daemon going back and forth, and then she's like do you accept me as your queen?
Yeah.
Type stuff. And then he kind of runs away. and
yeah, he clearly thinks that she was named queen just to right. spite him, you know? And so,
the Missaria and queen exchange, and she kind of got mm-hmm. in good favor of the queen, and especially with the tipping yeah. off the guards to Eric, the wrong Eric is here. There's two of them now, yeah. which while I'm on that, I thought that was a really good plan.
Yeah. I was like, you know, that's not like
it's, I thought it was kind of genius. Like, it's said. Easy. We have a guy that looks just like the other guy
to some extent.
And the armor is the same for both sides. So
yeah. Yeah. Real bad job by Team Black to not like try to like make it.
You couldn't even put like a different logo on somewhere. Like,
yeah,
switch it from Under Armour to Adidas or something, you know, to bring it back to Texas Tech stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, a lot of really good talks. The Otto King and Sir Kristen Cole there. It was yeah. funny when Sir Kristen Cole was charging up Eric about it, and then the two dudes got up from breakfast and they're like, "Oh, I'm out of here. This is getting awkward." Yeah. They grabbed that shit and left real quick. yeah, so a lot of good build up and discussions and talks between some of these characters. Yeah, Otto getting fired for the second time.
Same room.
I brought this up in the Texas Tech stuff, but he's like one of those coaches that gets fired and rehired and recycled over and over and over.
Hand of like, three kings.
Come on, get a new hand.
Maybe four now.
And then another like football reference there. He gives it to Sir Kristen Cole, at least for now. I don't know, permanently. We don't really know yet. But it's kind of like
we'll figure that out
when your coaching staff gets fired and the ownership goes the completely other direction. Like, and he even says, like, I'm done spilling ink. I want to spill blood. And so
it's like firing Mike Leach.
Right. He's going from, the defensive type political dude to the offensive strong type.
Yeah. Or more like firing Tuberville and then – or having Tuberville leave and then hiring Cliff.
Yes, I think it's that one. I think it's that one because we're going offensive after this. So, like, I had a couple football references built into that scene there. But, yeah, really good episode. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, I've enjoyed the first two episodes of the season. I thought this one was really good. I think it's setting up what's going to happen in the next few episodes is, like, we're obviously, like, heading right to war, and so you kind of got to get some of these stuff in, set the plot lines up, so you know, bring in a couple new characters. You know, we got a couple new characters that we got
dragons coming in, it looks like
some new dragons coming in. We got a reference of the other son that's Darren. In Old Town,
yes.
Darren, which has been something that a lot of fans have been waiting for.
He has a dragon
show, is he not? We have it confirmed that he is in the show now. His name was referenced. He has a dragon. So that's another piece to the puzzle, especially when you're talking about the dragon math on both sides, because these dragons are going to be fighting each other. And so I thought it was a really good episode. Like you said, there's a lot of good conversations. I also enjoyed the Jace conversation with his bride-to-be, Bayla.
Yes, talking about their fathers.
Bayla. Yeah, talking about their fathers, I thought that was a really sweet scene. I thought there was a lot of good stuff in this episode. And so, and then, of course, you had the tense scene of the brothers fighting and the brother going through the castle and everything, which was kind of similar to Blood and Cheese going through the castle in episode one, both sides getting their castles infiltrated here early. And so really good two episodes to start the season.
Hold on, let's talk about that fight scene for a second. Obviously that's the big, you know, theatrical performance of the episode. And I watched a behind the scenes. I don't know if you saw this with a couple of producers that were like,
too. Yeah,
we intentionally made it to be, you couldn't know who was who. And they did so many like circles and stuff while the fighting's happening,
same wounds
and stuff. And it's like, you didn't know who was who and who was where and who was winning the fight at any point. And even at the end, and then the other Kingsguard gets in there and he's like, which one's ours? And the queen's like, I don't know. And then you get to the end and you're like, all right, which, who won? Which Eric is this? And apparently it was Team Black's Eric, you know, the defender of the queen.
Apparently.
And then he's so distraught after that fight and killing his brother, because they're super connected.
His twin.
And that he kills himself and tells the queen, I'm sorry. But hey, he saved her at least.
Yeah. I thought it was a beautiful but tough scene. Yeah. You know, it was watching them fight.
I kind of wanted to go longer.
Of it, like you said.
More.
Yeah,
more
fighting. I did too. But then the intensity of it, you could feel the like the love and the hatred that they had to be in that situation. And how hard it was for them. I thought it was really well done, really well executed. But yeah, really brutal at the end of that. And then both sides, you know, losing a
really good player for them guard on each side. Yeah.
Really
to go back to your basketball reference, a guard.
Good Warriors. Good loyal to, you know, their cause, Warriors. And so those two go down, other pieces that fall. And so, yeah, really, really good episode. Who are your winners? I've got three winners for this episode.
I only got one written down, so let me get mine in first.
Okay, yeah. Who you got? We might have this one.
Mine's,
as a match.
I don't know, kind of weird, but a winner for me was the PR team for Team Green.
Okay.
I thought Otto's idea of using the child's funeral procession through the streets was a great, fantastic political idea to get, and literally had the dude in the front yelling like, this is the work of Queen Rhaenyra, Kinslayer, and just making her look awful. And I thought that was genius PR political move. On their part. I did hate seeing the kids like head stitched together. And then
I thought for sure.
And then when they got stuck, I was like, I was like, he's gonna go falling. Oh no. Luckily he did not. But that's my winner. It's the PR team for the funeral procession political move.
Yeah. I had Otto as a winner despite getting benched in this episode. I just thought it was a really fun Otto episode, which is weird because I don't like him at all, but I thought that plan was really good plan. I thought his scene where he's going off on Aegon and Kristen Cole was a great scene. And then my favorite part of the episode is when Alicent is like, I have sinned. And he just looks at her and he's like, I do not wish to hear it. He's like, yeah, don't tell me. I don't care. So I thought it was a really great Otto episode. I've got Tom Glenn Carney, the actor who played Aegon. I thought he did a really good job with playing Aegon in this episode with all the rage, the sadness. He did a really good acting job. I thought he was really brilliant in this episode. And then Lady Missaria, I think she is a winner in this episode because she helps prevent the death of Rhaenyra, because if she didn't spot him, Rhaenyra's dead, I think, at this
point. I like that pick, and like, what does, because her and Rhaenyra just had a really good conversation, I think, that went her Missaria's way. And so, like, now what does this do? Does she come back into the picture in the story as one of the, you know, helpers?
Yeah.
On the inside of King's Landing for Team Black? Like, what does she use this for and do in the future?
Yeah, that's what I'm curious as what happens with her. She was a character that I didn't really like in season one, mainly because her accent. They fixed her accent here. It's been much better, and she's been much more interesting as a character so far. But yeah, she really saved the day for Rhaenyra.
Yes.
Rhaenyra owes her her life, because she didn't notice that, you know, she's dead. And so, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see if that now she's firmly entrenched in Team Black, or if she's going to take her leave and her freedom that was offered her. So we'll be interested to watch their losers. Dustin, I have several losers in this episode. Who's your loser?
Biggest, I have a few written down also. I'll start, I guess. I think my biggest one is Otto getting fired as a hand for this.
I thought about having him as a winner and a loser, because I just thought it was a great Otto episode, but
he got fired again. So. And literally, like, he got fired from the previous guy too. And so getting fired for the second time, and especially when his whole thing is scheming and politicizing and trying to, he's tried to make himself the number two man for all this time and having all these building blocks working, and then literally gets fired and gets his title given to a guy that's not even close to being in that position as to Kristen Cole. So yeah, I think Otto is my biggest loser there.
I'm going to have Rhaenyra as a kind of a big loser in this episode, not to her fault really, but she's lost Daemon now because of his act of what he did. And that's not her fault really, but obviously like losing him and his dragon right now for the time being, you know, we don't really know what happens to him in the future yet. But that's definitely a piece that's not good for her to lose. She's lost, Eric, the twin on her side. She loses him. She has her castle infiltrated. She is literally like 10 feet away from being murdered in this episode. And so I think like, she's been trying to, kind of brace, not necessarily go directly into war here, but I think now she kind of has no choice to. And so I think not necessarily by any of her own fault, but I think she took some L's this week, unfortunately.
Yeah. My other one is a group of people, the rat catchers.
Yeah, mine too. Yeah, that rat catcher as a profession.
All like 12 of them that work in the King's Castle or whatever, King's Landing, Red Keep, whatever it is. They all got hung, including Cheese, because the he wouldn't tell them which one it was. So the king just hung them all. And that's also what kind of led to Otto and the king's exchange and him getting fired eventually. Because Otto's like, we just did all this PR with the making the queen look bad for killing somebody. And then you go and hang 12 bodies out in the streets for children and wives and dogs to mourn.
Yeah, their families. Yeah, dog. Maybe he wasn't mourning. Maybe he was like, yeah.
So the rat catchers, bad business there.
Yeah, I had that too. I just felt like a rat catcher as a profession. And it's like, man, I got into this job. And then you find yourself dead because of it. My last two losers, I've got Alicent. I think she's a loser in this episode. Tough look for her in this episode. And then Kristen Cole, obviously another loser who, you know, I hate this dude so much, but he comes up with the plan that, you know, theoretically could have worked, but that's going to backfire big time now. Yeah. Is that plan did not go well, and he's also blaming his, you know, what's one of his big mistakes in not protecting the queen and the king's family, blaming that on others. So, and then just continually breaks his vows over and over again. While you said talking about the purity of their position and how his cloak is dirty is a bad reflection, and I'm like, man,
yeah.
Fuck you.
Exactly right.
Just anytime he says something, that's just what I think. Fuck you. Any others that you had, or that it for you? Winner of the episode, Team Green or Team
Black? I think Green wins this one for the PR move.
I think so too. That was the other part of my Rhaenyra as a loser is this was that PR stunt.
PR move to get all the people on their side, even with the hanging of the rat catchers. I don't think that's as big a deal as I was trying to make it be. But yeah, I think they win this for sure and kind of bounce back from that child loss.
Rat catchers, Prince.
Bigger.
You know, which. I agree with you. I think Team Green wins episode two. So. That brings us to a tie so far in the series. It's a 1-1 series through two episodes. This was fun getting into this episode and these episodes and discussing. And before we get out of here, we've got a character comp for you. And Dustin has chosen Sir Kristen Cole, the biggest piece of shit in all of Westeros, as our character comp for us this week. So Dustin's going to hit the Texas Tech comp and I'm going to hit the Big 12 comp. So Dustin, I'm very curious to hear who your Texas Tech Kristen Cole comp
is. Yeah, I thought when we discussed this like over text last week, like, all right, you'll probably have a handful of it here and there. It's actually a lot harder to kind of pinpoint some stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I got some football references in there earlier, but I couldn't like pinpoint down, but one of them really popped at me, and it was for Kristen Cole. He's been named head of the King's Guard when he wasn't quite ready. You know, huge jump with no experience. Yeah. Been given, and he's not doing that very well because he's leaving the door for the Queen and Prince to get murdered to go hook up with Allison. And when you're not supposed to be having sex and you're supposed to be pure and all this stuff and charging up other King's Guards about that. And then gets handed the Hand of the King title with zero experience and definitely not the same career path as normal. You don't go King's Guard fighter type dude to political Hand of the King.
Yeah, it's usually like a savvy person.
That knows stuff, knows people, knows how to talk. Yeah.
Not just like
so my tech comp for this, like I said, like not experienced, keeps effing up, not ready for the moment. Sounds a lot like Robert Jennings last year. Like, we need you to step up and be our big man. I can't. I'm just a traffic cone out here. I'm not very good at my job. I'm not ready. So I was like, I just can't quit thinking like this is Robert Jennings with not ready for the moment. All the time from last basketball season.
All right. I wasn't expecting it to go there. I was thinking like maybe a head coach or something, or I was thinking maybe you were going to go Zach Carrier. yeah. Interesting. Or I wasn't sure if you're going to go somebody from the past either. I think that's the interesting thing with tech is you could do like a past person who's been in our history. So, okay. Robert Jennings, my Big 12 comp, we're going current Big 12. And really not a whole lot of attributes, but just the general hatred that everybody has to this program that hasn't even played a game in the conference yet. Utah is my Kristen Cole Big 12 comp, just because the sheer amount of hate that they have brought upon themselves from their fans just being so arrogant, which does reflect the attitude of Kristen Cole. He's a very arrogant person. You know, they haven't been in a power league for long, you know, that's, you know, a decade of being in a power league, yet they, you know, haven't been in the conference and yet declare themselves as the king of the conference, even though they are 0-0 in the Big 12 conference so far as a Big 12 conference foes. So I just think the general hatred that they've brought on themselves on Twitter just kind of reflects the general hatred that we all feel towards Kristen Cole. Every time we see him on the screen.
Yeah, it's like, get him off my TV. Get him off my timeline.
I just like when he opens his mouth and he's like talks about Rhaenyra and you're just like, dude, oh my God, you're the worst. You're the absolute worst. So that's my Big 12 comp for Sir Kristen Cole. Next week, we'll choose a new character and dive back into the character comps and, of course, episode 3 of House the Dragon. Hope you guys enjoyed that. It was nice to kind of deviate from a little Texas Tech sports, talk about something a little different. As we mentioned, Texas Tech sports, not a whole lot going on right now. And of course, there is. We'll be back to discuss it here on Tailgate Talks. To make sure you are following us, follow us on Apple, follow us on Spotify. Give us those 5 stars. 5 stars for the tailgate, please. And if you listen to us on Apple, you can always leave us a review there. Let us know your thoughts. If you have anything good to say or bad to say, you know, criticism is always welcome here. Also, follow us on social media. Follow us on Twitter at @tailgate_talks. That's where we do most of our posting and interacting on social media. We do, however, have Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We want to thank you guys for hanging out with us this week, discussing a little Texas Tech news and, of course, some House of the Dragon. And as always, we will catch y'all at the next tailgate.